Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. All right.
Hey.
Welcome to a new episode of Banking Reinvented. And today, after holidays, I'm very happy to welcome back Jouk. Good morning, Jouk.
Tim, very good to be here. All relaxed after the holidays, indeed.
Looking very tanned and all of that. Plus, we are now finally in the new studio. So that also looks a bit more up to par.
It's a major upgrade. For everybody who's following Backbase, we just moved to a new office here in Amsterdam, our new global headquarters. And it's a very nice context. It's a great thing to go be back to the office.
Now for today, we are going to speak about buy and build.
Yeah.
The typical trade-off in the boardroom to consider just buying a solution or completely building something bespoke on their own. Mm-hmm. We'll dive deep through the episode, but before we go there, maybe just a quick highlight that stood out to you over the past week.
I think throughout the summer season, what I saw is the ongoing momentum of the neobanks, Revolut, Nubank. I think the numbers, these guys now 80 million consumers worldwide, massive growth. And we can still be a little bit dismissive about, okay, it's just users, it's a loss-making business. No, but it's actually profitable. And I think these guys are just starting to expand their share of wallet, as in the higher margin products on top of it, the lifestyle banking capabilities. I think I remember, Tim, like when were we discussing the neo reality?
2019.
That is only 4 or 5 years ago, right? And at that time, it was more of a promise. We saw it was highly potential, but at the time, people were also massively skeptical. I think it's cool. Just 5 years. Look at the progress.
It's, to a degree, it's also a bit scary.
Right.
Now have the unit economics right, they have the technology right, and they're just entering country after country. It seems to have the scaling formula pretty clear for them, at least.
I think on the business model, I'm super excited. I think it's totally scaling. The numbers are there. The cross and upsell patterns are there. The economics are there. I think the economics have lots of improvement. The part I'm really worried about is the insane amount of people they are hiring. Thousands and thousands of people. So I wonder, dudes, you run a platform. The whole idea is to do more with less. So that's the part. I don't have the insight, but I'm a little bit puzzled. 8,000 extra employees in the case of Revolut. You think, like, why would you rent all these mega skyscrapers in London and why would you populate that with so many people?
Wow.
So maybe there's a help desk issue. I don't know.
There could be. And moving to the topic of today, buy and build. Just to give a bit of context, it is, over the past few decades, mostly a either or decision in the board, typically.
Correct. Yeah.
To say, hey, we have a certain theme, we have an investment thesis, let's go to market, and we either buy, build, or partner. That then still is an option there as well, by the way. However, that has changed over the past, I would say, 5 years, give or take, where you can potentially also make other decisions or other trade-offs. But before anything else, let's first explore a bit what are the trade-offs to go for full buy, what are trade-offs to go for full build,
yeah,
to get a view on that.
I think it's quite simple, right? You just buy to get speed. You don't need the development stuff. You get something out of the box. You get quick results. On the other hand, if you build, you can really tailor it. You can differentiate. I think historically, those were the two extremes to choose between. I think it is suboptimal. Both of them are actually very suboptimal because if you buy, you are basically in a cookie cutter solution and you have limited capabilities to differentiate and to change. If you build, it is extremely expensive and you have to do an insane amount of, let's call it system integration. I think if you look at that world, and especially with the larger banks, this is a normal reflex. You see IT departments that are thousands of people, and you still see, I think, a quite traditional approach where people buy different ingredients, like an identity management system, a process engine, a CRM, et cetera, so you've got basically a construction place where you've got all these, let's say, horizontal technologies laying ready to be integrated. And then you're going to spend an insane amount of time to integrate that stuff. And I think more concerning even there is that you are doing it typically in isolation of a silo or a business unit. So I think actually both models are explainable, right? They were the only choice you had in the past. But I think also both of them have severe downsides, I would say. Very inefficient.
Yeah. If we go a little bit for that explanation, like how would you explain the fact that there is the buy mantra so far? Why has that, apparently that has worked in the past, or at least it's been a flavor that was natural at the table in the past?
I think overall, the buy trend and the build trend are both equally valid. So let's be very clear. I think they have also a lot of benefits. So I think, why do you buy? You go for time to value. You go to market. It's an outsourcing concept. It's where you rely on specialties of other parties that can do these things with better economics. So that's the same thing what we see with the move to cloud. That's the same thing we see with large language models. That's, I think, the basic concept of any economy. You have a separation of concern. You have people that specialize in certain parts. They do it at scale. So the economics and the expertise are just way better. So I'm a big fan of buy, and I'm also a big fan of build. But buy particularly, I think we have to realize that every 10 years, I think the tide of IT integration and platforms, and basically it's maturing. So I think a lot of the basic plumbing, luckily, nowadays, we don't have to do. So I think there's, especially with a platform view, platforms are the perfect thing to buy because they do the plumbing and then you can be creative and innovative on top of them.
On the other side, there's also still a very strong build, let's say, mantra in many of the boardrooms. That's either because of their heritage, because of the amount of engineers they have, maybe it's their senior leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But what have you seen in the past 10 years, give or take, in the Backbase context?
I think that we've seen actually quite a few boards where, also influenced by the strategy consultants, people were completely and are completely convinced how important it is to have a superior customer experience and also how to build an IT organization that is more agile. So basically mantras like we're an IT company with a banking license, right? I think what is behind all of that, it is a full acknowledgement of that we are competing in a platform era. We need to have deeper IT skill sets. We are living in a platform economy. So just like the Revoluts or the Apples or the Netflixes, we need to have a decent core competence in technology, right? And I think we all are in full agreement how important that is. And I think especially the larger banks are also able to build up the firepower to do. I think it's a little bit more problematic for mid-sized banks where you don't have deep wallets and you maybe don't have all the muscle to win the war for talent. But that IT competence and agile competence, I think, is really very important. So as a result of that, forward-looking banks have been building this. I think there's maybe one slight nuance is that you can go too far with that by suddenly thinking you need to reinvent the whole wheel and you have to do all the plumbing yourself. And I think there's a nuance where you can say you could actually also there leverage cloud technology, you can leverage foundational AI technology, you can leverage engagement banking platforms. All these core elements are there to do the foundational work. And so then you can actually build on top of it. And the economics of that model are, of course, way better because now all that IT capacity is allocated at creating differentiating customer value.
If I hear you correctly, then buy is basically a very healthy model. It has the right economic trade-off to make impact in the business. You also mentioned separation of concern, meaning it makes no sense to build yourself certain capabilities that you can just buy off the shelf and leverage.
Yeah.
If I may, I think that very much holds true for just the usual CRM you're using or maybe something that is not customer facing to a degree or something that you can really consume as a SaaS solution. Let's say DocuSign.
Yeah.
No way you're going to build that type of stuff yourself. It's just a critical business component. Yep. You insource it in that sense. If you then look at buy in the banking context, there's a whole landscape. There's a whole domain of vendors and players that supposedly deliver all the value that a bank would be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Still, I'm hearing you say it's not the ideal model for what you would like to achieve. Am I hearing that correctly, Jaap?
So I'm a big fan of verticalized, optimized technology stacks per vertical. So for telco or for manufacturing or for banking in this matter. And then within banking, you've got all these subdomains. And the reason is that in the past 20 years, either on the build or on the buy side, there was limited choice. And the choice actually typically, I would think, is if you think about it, was horizontal technologies, a horizontal identity management platform, a horizontal CRM. And these platforms, they come with the promise to streamline your sales journeys. They come with the promise to be customer centric and drive the customer experience. But it's just actually just potential of these platforms. But there's no real acceleration in how they actually help you do that. So there's no real recipe or there's no real instant acceleration value. And I think that's where vertical technologies and solutions come into play because they basically take these horizontal capabilities as a foundational element. They already integrate them into a more holistic connected platform. So these things are basically now already integrated. This is saving a tremendous amount of system integration work, which you normally have to do just to stitch horizontal technologies together. And then, so that's the first major issue there. The second one is that you need to apply it into an industry-specific customer journey, which is another amount of insane amount of work. So I therefore think I'm delighted to actually see that we now see more fit for purpose industry solutions. We see it in pharma, we see it in healthcare, we see it in telco, we see it in banking. And I think these vertical solutions just provide fundamentally, they are better pre-integrated and they provide more instant acceleration value at the journey level. Hence, and the right ones, I think, of course, then also give you the flexibility to further build on top of them.
Yeah.
You basically have a full open innovation space, but you don't have to worry about the plumbing.
Very clear. Then on the building side, you mentioned a few topics where I think also in the back-based journey, we figured out that self-building this stack from the ground up with all the capabilities that are needed to truly drive an engagement layer to the fullest extent basically means you're reinventing the wheel to a degree, but to make it specific, it means building an entitlements engine. It means building an identity and access management layer. It means building a digital banking services layer that can hollow out the core step by step. Mm-hmm. All of these concepts you would then need to build from the ground up. If I hear you correctly, you're also saying that doing that type of work is going to take you many years. It's highly complex. There's a lot of integration hassle, if I may,
yeah,
which will not even give you the value of the build strategy to begin with, because you have all of that work, almost that moat of work you have to go through to first of all become successful with that strategy.
Yeah.
Does it hold true that if you would need to start that journey today, it is almost silly to not consider looking into the market and seeing if there's a pre-integrated fabric to actually build on top of?
Yes, and I think there's even something more extreme. I think you could try to build it yourself, but in the normal way of budget cycles and how banks work and finding the balance between shareholder value, customer value, etc., it would almost be insane to get funding for a fundamental cross-bank, cross-line of business, cross-product line type of modernization. It's not funded like that in the first place. And I think that kind of creates all the IT legacy in the beginning, because everything is funded every year in the context of a specific channel, a specific product line. So a lot of, basically the vast majority of all these IT investments have been in isolation. So people are reinventing the wheel. They are doing all the work over and over, and there's just no notion of a common platform. And I think therefore you need to have almost like a hard start with a greenfield technology stack. I'm not a greenfield bank, right? But a greenfield technology stack on the side. And there you can choose, right? You are implementing or incubating that in-house, but you're building it maybe in the context of a line of business, and it has the potential to expand to other lines of business. So you can organically build it yourself. Or you can, of course, nowadays, there are these type of platforms that have been created in the last 10 years, and you can use them as the foundation.
So what needs to hold true at the boardroom to stop having those siloed decisions and indeed having a budget cycle that is at the board across the bank? Like, where does that start? What's the change pattern that you
see?
Well,
I think it will not change, to be fair. I think in an ideal world, all these things are ideal, but they are not, right? And there's no need for it. So I think therefore this notion of progressive modernization is perfect. I think nowadays you can take platform technologies in the cloud. You can, and the whole move to the cloud modernization, the AI incubation, rethinking the way how you streamline your services and your sales journeys. I now think you can basically, my recipe, and I'm a little bit biased, but I would say, take a line of business or take one of those problems, but do them on a common platform. So that platform is already there. All those capabilities are there, but you don't have to boil the ocean in one go. You can do it phased, progressive, eat the elephant, slice and dice it, journey by journey.
Piece by piece.
Piece by piece, of course.
Taking one step back and just to challenge the idea a bit more on the build side.
Yeah.
Technology by now has become way simpler to implement with on a rapid pace. Also with the kicking in of AI, there's the whole promise of potentially even generating certain capabilities using LLMs as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that there's perhaps a future where even the build route itself can become incredibly accelerated and potentially become a strategy again on its own?
Absolutely. So we love builders. I think build is essential. Build is great. We have to also say that not everybody has enough build capacity. There's the war for talent, the budget size, etc. But built in itself. So I think it is great to move forward to have a level of IT competence, right? Either in an ecosystem or directly in your own organization. I think it's important to have leadership teams that have a level of technology experience or digital experience. We have to infuse that into the leadership teams. And it's great to work with these leadership teams that kind of have that knowledge and that drive and that and basically the change makers that are changing, I think, the ethos and the agility of the banks that we're discussing here. So I think that's a prerequisite. But then if you actually go to the build, there's way more accelerated build or build with platforms where you don't have to do the plumbing. In the future, the next 3-4 years, build with AI, where process automation, journey optimization, I think we're definitely going to a future that actually journey development or process automation or creating algorithms that will optimize the customer journey to trigger growth or provide relevant advice. I think all these things will become more accessible at scale and better economics.
So there's very likely a future where you can generate your front-end journeys for your different channels and maybe even variations almost on the click of a button and go for an optimization flow.
That sounds almost too good to be true, but I think if we give it another 3 to 4 or 5 years, I would not be surprised if we will see way more of that. These things will not happen magically because just creating the UI, I think that's totally doable. But then where's the plumbing to properly route that? Where's the audit trail? So there's definitely, I think, a lot of foundational technologies need to be in place, exposed via APIs. So I think the enterprise integration, the data aggregation and refinement, like a lot of these things need to be in place. But once you have that foundation in place, I think there will be way more variety at the journey level.
Yes. Yeah, so that actually makes the point of the combination of buy plus build or the accelerated build, if you may. I think it's a very good moment to introduce it. Under the assumption that a platform is in place and you have your data aggregation in place and the enterprise integration patterns and so forth, you effectively have your engagement layer in a good shape. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you can indeed unlock any build capability you might see in the future. And it could be AI driven, it could still be very manual, whatever the flavor might become in the near future. Mm-hmm. But at least that fabric, that pattern is in place and to a degree will future-proof you,
Flink. Totally. Well, if you think about through that lens, so what are the prerequisites? What do you need to have in place to enable it? Exactly to your point. You need to have the infrastructure that kind of integrates to your legacy system. So basically the rails up and down need to be in place. You would like to create a lot of stuff from fintech ecosystem partners, right? For KYC, for AML, for credit scores. There's a wealth of powerful capabilities and it's basically about how to create the composition of all those data sets and those capability to compose them into a meaningful journey, right? Core system integration, fintech ecosystem integration and aggregation. Once you have those that integration capability in place, then on top of that, you need to orchestrate. I think the key word is orchestration. And then you wonder, what are we orchestrating here? We are orchestrating the essence of the bank, and it is how do we serve the customer and how do we sell to the customer to maximize customer lifetime value. If you really, that's basically what you do there in that engagement layer. And of course, you need to have a lot of, let's say, engines in the background to facilitate that, like the workflow, the case management, the decisioning, etc. So that describes, I think, the fabric. And if I really simplified, I would say you have the integration fabric. You have the data and the intelligence fabric where you can make the decisions. And then you've got the engagement or the journey orchestration fabric where you basically streamline sales and servicing journeys. That fabric is really essential. It is the overall engine room to orchestrate any customer interaction, customer facing, employee facing. And then ultimately the actual UI you are generating on top of that, it can be online, it can be mobile, it can be Gen AI chat driven. The form factor will vary. And I think also that form factor, there will be a lot of experimentation.
Yeah. And what you're describing to me now is the essence of what accelerated build could look like.
Yeah.
You basically go for an existing set of, let's say, platform capabilities. You mentioned the different layers here in this scenario. But essentially you're saying if you would absorb that technology, bring it in place in your organization, do the integrations towards your existing core, potentially unlock fintech integrations as needed. And then on top of that, once it's fully powered and able to orchestrate, you can go fast still with, let's say, the more commoditized journeys, just to get the speed so you're not at least wasting time on rebuilding the login screen or the transactions view, as we often say. But you really put the engineering capacity and the brain power really on differentiation.
Totally.
And that's one of the topics we didn't really highlight just yet. Why would you make the trade-off of buy versus build? What is really the driver behind the decision to begin with? The decision is driven by how can we create the most value the fastest?
Yeah, ultimately, of course, that's what you do. I was just, while you were talking, I was thinking like in the night, why do we do it? And maybe a very silly private metaphor. Sometimes I did a bit of do-it-yourself at home. And I made it so many times the mistake that you try to build something at home, you're doing a little piece of work there, and then you don't have the right ingredients or you don't have the right tools. And then you start to compromise. And then the outcome is not that great. Maybe you recognize it.
I totally do.
Or it's the same thing with cooking, right? First, I'd rather spend 50% of the time first to get all the ingredients in place, like literally every ingredient. And then you can go to the job, making the ultimate meal. I think that's where we make a lot of mistakes. If you don't have the ingredients in place, or if you don't have the right tooling in place, and you don't have the recipes in place, you basically are working in a very efficient operating model. And I think right now, with these type of platforms you describe, I think pretty much all the ingredients are there, pre-integrated, aligned with the right tooling. So it gives actually much more time to actually really focus on the craft of making the real impact.
All right, then let's go to the key takeaways of this episode, Jaap. We discussed the buy and build trade-off, where historically it's an either-or decision, or at least that's how we know it from the past decade. We unpacked why you would buy. You buy for time to value, just speed, getting it in place so you can run the business. We also spoke about separation of concern, where it makes no sense to build certain capabilities because you can just insource them and that's it.
Yep.
We also spoke about the reason for going for a build strategy. It's the full flexibility. It gives you all the, let's say, capability to deliver it in your particular flavor and gives you all the control. So it gives you the potential for a superior customer experience, as an example. At the same time, it has downsides. Right, so going for the buy strategy, you typically end up with cookie cutter. Right, it's just not fully fit for purpose, and you cannot really differentiate the value proposition you're bringing to the table. On the build side, it really balloons in terms of costs. It balloons in terms of complexity, and most likely you're not going to get the full value out of it because you just have to deal with a lot of work that you otherwise would not have to do if you indeed go for a buy strategy, as an example. We then discussed a bit the combination of both, where you could indeed buy, acquire a platform and start building on top of it so you can differentiate there where it really matters and put your resources there where it can really make an impact. And we ended up with a discussion on how can you really differentiate and where does that differentiation actually sit? As an example, bringing all the layers of a potential platform like Backbase, an engagement platform, in place with the integration, with the intelligence fabric, with the engagement fabric where you orchestrate the actual capabilities and then fire up the journeys, that in a way sets you up to be future-proofed and allows you to and accelerate with out-of-the-box journeys that allow you to go fast, not rebuilding anything that's really basic, but also giving you the potential to build where you can really make an impact and differentiate. I think that's the highlight of the discussion so far. We also spoke a little bit about the boardroom decision.
Yeah.
So far, budgeting is just done in the different lines of business. So maybe that's also just the reality. But that was the lay of the land. Anything you would highlight or double down on?
I think it's perfectly summarized, but I'm a big fan of vertical platforms. And the reason is we can go with a horizontal CRM. We can go with a horizontal process engine. We can basically take all these horizontal technologies and then build on top of them. And we've seen it, but I think there's a massive downside to it. So you do two things actually that are bespoke where you are reinventing the wheel. A, you have to integrate these horizontal platforms to an insane amount. And like, why not bring these elements pre-integrated? So that headache, also the technical depth you will accrue over time, it's not your problem anymore. And the second part is that I think vertical solutions really focus on vertical expertise, vertical data sets, the domain model, the workflows, the compliancy. You can basically get way more industry-ready acceleration out of the box, both for your end customers and for your employees. I think in the past 20 years, there was no other choice than to go with horizontal point solutions or with horizontal platforms. I think now we are really exciting. In the last 5-8 years, you really see a trend towards vertically optimized technology stacks that are pre-integrated, pre-connected, and industry-specific acceleration. So that kind of really makes the difference, I think, in that kind of adopt and build. I think ultimately it is accelerated build.
Yeah.
It is accelerated build, I think, ultimately is the key thing because you don't have to do the plumbing. You can avoid a lot of bespoke system integration and you can avoid a lot of technical depth. And you can really focus and concentrate your development efforts on differentiation, customer value, competitive edge. It will make IT just way more efficient. I think IT and IT development and software development is great, but it's also probably one of the most annoying and most inefficient activities we've seen on the planet so far in history of mankind. It brought us a lot of good things, and don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of room for efficiency.
So luckily, buy and build 10 years ago was really an either-or decision. By now, it's actually you can do both at the same time. Great. With that, we're going to wrap up the episode. Thanks, Jaap. Good to see you again.
Great.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a
podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.